Hi, everyone. Welcome back. I'm recording this on January 23rd, and I'll probably post it on the 24th. So I hope you're doing well. I hope you're having a good month, a good beginning to the new year. The full moon will be the 25th, so that's coming right up. And it's the wolf moon, as we mentioned last time. So I hope that you're enjoying the light and the radiance and the feeling of fullness in your life in certain areas. And also it's a beautiful time to release thought patterns or emotional patterns once the full moon goes into its waning period. And that's just a nice rhythm always to be welcoming and releasing. If you remember last time, we talked about the radical being calendar, and that is something I created with the year ahead in mind, building upon itself each month. And I have to look back at the beginning of the podcast, and my intention at its inception was to share depth psychological perspectives and myth and folk and fairy tales and perspectives of growing consciousness and what C.G. Jung referred to as the path of individuation, where we are becoming our fullness, our authentic self with a capital S. It's not about self-improvement, but about the revelation of who we really are. So these have been the themes. And as you know, if you've been following along, the podcast has pivoted in some ways because new material found me, and that was the reality transurfing material, which has been hugely popular and so incredibly helpful to me and to others. And then we've talked also about the work of Neville Goddard. And so looking at how these themes have been weaving in through the podcast, I'm starting to see a clarity now that at least the year ahead is offering in terms of its scope. And that is, we will be tracking with the calendar that I created that is definitely talking about the themes we have been exploring together with the reality transurfing material and increasing consciousness, moving into the unity consciousness space and welcoming those ideas and that perspective and that outlook, that flow state, if you will, and different practices around doing that. But what I've noticed thematically, and I didn't know this till I am looking back over my shoulder at the episodes that have passed, but I have pulled definitely and been inspired by the work of C.G. Jung, obviously, Eckhart Tolle, I've mentioned him, Lenka Litanska, her work is very inspiring and very much in the space of conscious business. Okay, so we've pulled from some of her work, but I've returned to Neville Goddard somewhat intermittently, and the more I understand and deepen into this work, and the more I surrender in releasing identities, the more I understand Neville Goddard's work. And so how I anticipate the year ahead is definitely we will be touching on the themes explored in the calendar and giving practical activities of the imagination and exercises to help us align with those perspectives of unity consciousness. But I'm also going to be doing much more, actually pulling from Neville Goddard's lectures and talks, because he was such a visionary. And I think we are just really coming into an appreciation of his work now. And I feel that I can offer some clarity because I have a fuller understanding of his work myself. And there's a bit of a distinction between, quote unquote, law of attraction and law of assumption. And we're going to talk about that. And it's not that either is better than the other, but I think as we evolve as a human species, we just come into a fuller idea of how to embrace conscious manifestation principles. And I think a lot of the law of attraction material that's been around for several years is very, very helpful. I have had success with that. But what I'm finding about Neville Goddard's work, Law of Assumption, and we will make this distinction, is that it's a much fuller approach to touching our divinity, that being the ultimate goal. Yes, you're going to create beautiful outcomes in your relationships and in your financial life and in your health and in your vocation or your gifts and your talents that you're sharing with the world. But the goal is just not a one-off manifestation here or there. It's discovering your identity as the divine. And so I think that's why it has dovetailed so beautifully with how our podcast began, but I sort of didn't see the brilliance of how this was all fitting together until just very recently. So I've been about tracking that inner divinity and seeking to communicate with it and seeking to have a relationship with it. That's been my depth psychological focus for so long. And so it's fitting that all of these beautiful teachers that I so appreciate learning from, it seems to me that I'm arriving at Neville's work again almost for the first time because I've been prepared. I've been preparing in the last couple of years to really understand his work better. So if that is somewhat the journey you've been on, then that makes sense that we have found each other. I think I needed to travel these other paths and sort of see how they all started to coalesce with each other. And so I almost feel like, although we've talked about Neville's work before, we're going to more systematically dive into his work in this coming year. And today begins one of those conversations. So I'm really excited to share that with you because it's so helpful to me. It reinforces the new way of thinking and seeing and feeling and experiencing that is becoming the way I live now. But I've needed these other journeys to sort of prep me for that fuller understanding. So Law of Attraction, quote unquote, books and perspectives and manifestation techniques that are out there in the public square. That's all good stuff. That's all good stuff. And there's no right or wrong way to go about this. Let your own heart lead you. But in my experience, the Law of Assumption, which is Neville's work, is taking those principles of manifestation, but in the fullness that we are ultimately, that the greatest gift is we are uncovering who we really are. And that belongs to every single person on the planet equally. And I love that. Neville was not a guru. He had a teacher named Abdullah. And Abdullah was from Ethiopia. He was a Black mystic. And he also taught Joseph Murphy, who also was writing in the time that Neville was writing. And I find that fascinating that these two visionaries were students of Abdullah. And I've just done a little bit of research on Abdullah because I don't know anything about him, and he definitely deserves the credit for mentoring Neville. And I know Neville speaks often of him in his lectures, but I found this little bit online that I wanted to share with you. And this is, there have been some books written about Abdullah recently, the Ethiopian mystic who mentored Neville Goddard and Joseph Murphy. And this article that I'm going to share just a few points with you from talks about Abdullah's teaching being rooted in a very firm faith in the imagination of oneself. Human beings are limitless possibilities and opportunities to do and be anything they want to imagine. And there are three main lessons that Abdullah taught, which then Neville and Joseph Murphy in his own work expanded upon these ideas and really made a career of. And that's what we'll be sharing together. But just going back and honoring Abdullah, who we are is beyond the physical. When we know who we are, our physical circumstances don't matter. This is because we know that our physical circumstance will change based on our mental state. The physical state responds to our conviction, to our knowing. Abdullah lived it. For example, he used to attend an opera theater in a seat where Black people were not allowed at that time in New York. Neville Goddard offered to buy him a ticket, but he refused and did it himself. Neville stated that Abdullah was proud to be Black and didn't want anything about him to change one bit. The time Abdullah lived in the 20s and 1930s was a time in America when Blacks were heavily discriminated against. Knowing himself, Abdullah never allowed anyone to refer to him in a derogatory fashion. Abdullah never felt discriminated, despite the fact that he lived in the 20s and 30s when Blacks were extremely subject to all kinds of segregation. He would attend opera show in the front seat without any disturbance. Number two, don't settle for partial. Don't settle for less of what you truly want. Abdullah taught that we can create our own reality regardless of any circumstances. He taught not to be mediocre. Human beings are potential for the best, for the fullest. And three, close the reasoning mind. Abdullah used to slam the door for things which required logical answers. He repeatedly showed the power of slamming that door. It represents shutting down the logical reasoning mind. Abdullah taught to not worry about the how. Time is just an illusion. Abdullah taught the importance of firm faith without any compromise. So I want to honor who Neville Goddard's mentor was, and then share a bit about Neville, because if I haven't really talked about him in great specificity before, this is time to do so. And Neville's dates were from 1905 to 1972, and sometimes he just used the pen name Neville, and he was a Barbadian American, so he was from Barbados. And he was a dancer in New York in his early life, and then came into this relationship with his mentor, Abdullah, and really began to look at the Bible as a psychological study, not an exact historical document. He viewed the Bible as a psychological explanation of how we are to awaken to our divinity. And so that will be our perspective going forward into the new year. And I just want to situate that, because when I'm referring to any biblical text, I'll be approaching that from Neville's perspective, which was Abdullah's perspective, that this is a psychological reading of the Bible. So wherever your spiritual beliefs coincide with that, that is totally up to you how you want to navigate that. Just know from the perspective that I'll be talking about it in the context of our podcast, we'll be talking about anything from the biblical texts as a psychological insight, not as actual figures. So it's just a perspective to help us embrace a new way of thinking and being and identifying ourselves and discovering our divinity. Neville spent much of his life then living in the Los Angeles area and lecturing on this material. And he has so profoundly influenced my life. And I'm so grateful for all of his work. And I just want to share that his work is available in the public domain. You can find all kinds of lectures in his own voice on YouTube. And then there's a site called, well, there are many sites where you can actually read his material, but there's a great resource called realneville.com. And that's where I'm getting a lot of the material that I'll be sharing with us on the podcast. And I say us because I am reinforcing these discoveries as I continue to teach it myself. And it just helps me so much to do so. So my Jungian psychology path, my folk and fairy tale and myth path, my window into Eckhart Tolle's work, all of these have coalesced so beautifully. And then the reality transurfing material gave us really practical skill sets to use in real time, quote unquote, for not being triggered, for coming into emotional maturity as we continue to shed the layers and identities of who we are not, so as to embrace who we really are and to discover that and let that be our guiding principle. And as we open today and move into a beautiful lecture by Neville, I just wanted to touch on an amazing quote by Marie-Louise von Franz, who is one of Jung's heirs, one of his premier students, and who carried on so much of his work. And she talks about a term called the fifth essence. And this was referring back to psychological types where we have the function attitudes of thinking, feeling, sensation, intuition that came to later comprise like the MBTI personality types. So this was in reference to that, but she talks about this amazing thing called the fifth essence. And she says, then comes the fifth essence, which is not another additional element, but is, so to speak, the essence of all four, and yet none of the four. It is the four in one. To the four comes a fifth thing, which is not the four, but is something beyond them and consists of them all. That is what the alchemists called the fifth essence, the quintessence, or the philosopher's stone. It means a consolidated nucleus of the personality, which is no longer identified with any of the functions. This is stepping out, so to speak, of identification with one's own consciousness, with one's own unconscious, and dwelling in this middle plane. From then on, one moves without movement, runs without running. That is such a mystical passage to me, and to me, so beautifully articulates encountering the self with a capital S, encountering the true pearl of great price, as Neville would say, or as the Bible says, the true gold, which is uncovering our divinity and moving in our human world, then from that new center of gravity. So yes, aspects of our life are going to radically change because we know how to use the imagination properly. It has become a trained instrument now. And Neville likens this to like having a piano. That's like having our imagination at our disposal suddenly, but we don't know how to play it yet. And there are infinite ways that one can create music, and sophisticated and ever more sophisticated music with an instrument like a piano. But in the beginning, we have to learn the rudiments of just a scale, of just a simple melody, and then build from there. But the infinite music that can come from using the imagination skillfully and in harmony with our divinity. I just love that link to, you know, the metaphor of the piano. So as we move through 2024 together, we'll be talking about the month-to-month progression through the calendar is giving specifics, practical guidance for rooting ourselves when we're triggered, when we have challenge. But we're also going to be diving more into Neville's work, which we begin today, because I feel like we have such a basis that we have laid a beautiful foundation for that we can really start to understand and blossom in this work together. So that is my intention. If you remember from last time, we were talking about I am. That was our thought for January. And I gave three principles last time to keep in mind throughout the month. And one was going back farther into our revision practice, which we've talked about and which was talked about at length last episode. And we talked about literally imagining unplugging the beast or the Frankenstein of whatever thought that is not helpful or fear perspective or anxiety that starts to take on a life of its own. We talked about literally unplugging that, imagining unplugging that from the wall, taking that source of energy away, and we don't have to get rid of anything. We can let our ego perspective be there. It's part of our human walk, but we are empowering our divinity to be in the driver's seat. And then the third thing we talked about last time in service to the I am is really starting to work this muscle of knowing that your inner divinity and your heart's desires, that is reality. And whatever we may have unconsciously created in our 3D world is something to not react to, because we're going to be pivoting and aligning with new outcomes in the 3D external space. And so it's really important to live from this perspective of our true home, our true heart's desires, which are already real, which are already alive, which are already a reality. And to live from that space, to live from that knowing, from that enthusiasm and sense of relaxation and sense of peace. And then if we have clerical tasks to deal with in the external world, as these two worlds are bridging and merging into each other, we do that. But we don't react to the challenges of the 3D world as it's merging with our true home. We don't react to it in the same way that we used to. And therefore, we don't feed it. And we know that from our work with reality transurfing material. All the pendulums, if you remember, all of the conflict that tries to seduce us and capture our imagination, the conflict itself is the thing to drop. So looking at the two dreams, the perspective of engaging with your life in any moment as though it is a dream, and that anything can happen in any moment, having that perspective of wonder and possibility and homing and rooting in the heart's desires and living from that space. So we talked about those three last time, and I hope that those practices are assisting you through the month here. And so today, I want to pivot now to actually going into some of Neville's work and just reading straight from his lectures. And again, these are all available in the public domain, so you can find them at realneville.com. There's audio, there's articles galore. And the one I chose to share today is simply how to use your imagination. And I know we've covered this before, but we're covering it again because all these beautiful tributaries that we've been following, I feel now, are moving in the current of a river. And this river is taking us to the ocean of our being. And so I just want to revisit in some instances and reinforce for all of us, especially me, these beautiful concepts. Neville is very, very clear, obviously, because Abdullah was very, very clear that these practices are very simple in nature. This perspective is very simple in nature. And the only challenge that we're encountering is just the habitual misuse of our mind. So there are no gurus. This is putting us in contact with our own divinity. And again, we'll be referring to any biblical reference as a psychological exercise, not as a religious study. So keep that in mind. But I just want to begin today from a lecture from 1955, and it's just simply called How to Use Your Imagination. So I'll probably comment as we move through it, but these are Neville Goddard's words himself. The purpose of this record is to show you how to use your imagination to achieve your every desire. Most men are totally unaware of the creative power of imagination and invariably bow before the dictates of facts and accept life on the basis of the world without. But when you discover this creative power within yourself, you will boldly assert the supremacy of imagination and put all things in subjection to it. When a man speaks of God in man, he is totally unaware that this power called God in man is man's imagination. This is the creative power in man. There is nothing under heaven that is not plastic as potter's clay to the touch, as the shaping spirit of imagination. Once a man said to me, "You know, Neville, I love to listen to you talk about imagination, but as I do so, I invariably touch the chair with my fingers and push my feet into the rug just to keep my sense of reality and the profundity of things." Well, undoubtedly, he is still touching the chair with his fingers and pushing his feet into the rug. Well, let me tell you of another one who didn't touch with her fingers and didn't push that foot of hers onto the board of the streetcar. It's the story of a young girl just turned 17. It was Christmas Eve, and she is sad at heart, for that year she had lost her father in an accident, and she is returning home to what seemed to be an empty house. She was untrained to do anything, so got herself a job as a waitress. This night, it's quite late, Christmas Eve, it's raining, the car is full of laughing boys and girls going home for their Christmas vacation, and she couldn't conceal her tears. Luckily for her, as I said, it was raining, so she stuck her face into the heavens to mingle her tears with rain. And then holding the rail of the streetcar, this is what she did. She said, "This is not rain. Why, this is spray from the ocean, and this is not the salt of tears that I taste, for this is the salt of the sea and the wind, and this is not San Diego. This is a ship, and I am coming into the Bay of Samoa." And there she felt the reality of all she had imagined. Then came the end of the journey, and all are out. 10 days later, this girl received a letter from a firm in Chicago saying that her aunt, several years before, when she sailed for Europe, deposited with them $3,000 with instructions that if she did not return to America, this money should be paid to her niece. They had just received information of the aunt's death, and we're now acting upon her instructions. 1 month later, this girl sailed for Samoa. As she came into the bay, it was late that night, and there was the salt of the sea and the wind. It wasn't raining, but there was spray in the air. And she actually felt what she'd felt 1 month before, only this time she had realized her objective. Now, this whole record is technique. I want to show you today how to put your wonderful imagination right into the feeling of your wish fulfilled and let it remain there and fall asleep in that state. And I promise you, from my own experience, you will realize the state in which you sleep if you could actually feel yourself right into the situation of your fulfilled desire and continue therein until you fall asleep. As you feel yourself right into it, remain in it until you give it all the tones of reality, until you give it all the sensory vividness of reality. As you do it in that state, quietly fall into sleep. and in a way you will never know. You could never consciously devise the means that would be employed. You will find yourself moving across a series of events leading you towards the objective realization of this state. And I just want to pause right here that in my experience and then others who teach Neville's work, I have picked up this tip along the way too. If you have trouble actually falling asleep before your imagination practice is finished, two things. You can either like sit in a chair and do it before you lie down, and that's one way. But also, it doesn't have to be going to sleep. It could be in a meditative state as well. So sometimes I love the idea of letting this beautiful imaginal practice take me into sleep. And I often seek to do that. But other times too, when I meditate in the morning, you know, after I've gotten up and gotten a shower and had my coffee, and then I prepare for my day, I love to begin by going into a meditative state, which is a similar frequency of the brain, you know, that one would be experiencing drifting off into sleep. So it has the same effect. And if maybe I have a timer set or music playing gently in the background or whatever, you know, meditative audio going, then you know that imaginal practice is also achieving the same thing. So just an aside there. Back to Neville. Now, here is a practical technique. The first thing you do, you must know exactly what you want in this world. When you know exactly what you want, make as lifelike a representation as possible of what you would see and what you would touch and what you would do were you physically present and physically moving in such a state. For example, suppose I wanted a home, but I had no money, but I still know what I want. I, without taking anything into consideration, I would make a lifelike representation of the home that I would like with all the things in it that I would want. And then this night, as I would go to sleep, I would in a state, a drowsy, sleepy state, the state that borders upon sleep, I would imagine that I am actually in such a house that were I to step off the bed, I would step onto the floor of that house. Were I to leave this room, I would enter the room that is adjacent to my imagined room in that house. And while I am touching the furniture and feeling it so solidly real, and while I am moving from one room to the other in my imaginary house, I would go to sound asleep in that state. And I know that in a way I could not consciously devise, I would realize my house. I have seen it work time and time again. If I wanted a promotion in my business, I would ask myself, what additional responsibilities would be mine were I to be given this great promotion? What would I do? What would I say? What would I see? How would I act? And then in my imagination, I would begin to see and touch and do and act as I would outwardly see and touch and act were I in that position. If I now desired the mate of my life, were I now in search of such a wonderful girl or such a wonderful man, what would I actually find myself doing that would imply that I have found my state? For instance, suppose now I was a lady. One thing I would definitely do, I would be wearing a wedding ring. I would take my imaginary hands and I would feel the ring that I would imagine to be there. And I would keep on feeling it and feeling it until it seemed to be solidly real. I would give it all the sensory vividness I am capable of giving anything. And while I am feeling my imaginary ring, which implies that I am married, I would sleep. So obviously, this lecture is coming to us from the 50s. So, you know, and give it the cultural context that would be appropriate for you. But we get the idea. This story is told us in the Song of Songs or Song of Solomon. It is said, at night on my bed, I sought him whom my soul loveth. I found him whom my soul loveth, and I would not let him go until I had brought him into my mother's house, right into the chamber of her that conceived me. That's a quote from the Bible. If I would take that beautiful poem and put it into modern English, into practical language, it would be this. While sitting in my chair, I would feel myself right into the situation of my fulfilled desire. And having felt myself into that state, I would not let it go. I would keep that mood alive, and in that mood, I would sleep. That is taking it, quote, right into my mother's chamber, into the chamber of her that conceived me. You know, people are totally unaware of this fantastic power of the imagination. But when man begins to discover this power within him, he never plays the part that he formerly played. He doesn't turn back and become just a reflector of life. From here on in, he is the effector of life. The secret of it is to center your imagination in the feeling of the wish fulfilled and remain therein. For in our capacity to live in the feeling of the wish fulfilled lies our capacity to live the more abundant life. Most of us are afraid to imagine ourselves as important and noble individuals, secure in our contribution to the world just because. At the very moment that we start our assumption, reason and our senses deny the truth of our assumption, we seem to be in the grip of an unconscious urge which makes us cling desperately to the world of familiar things and resist all that threatens to tear us away from our familiar and seemingly safe moorings. Like I said, that's actually the challenge, is the habits of the mind and the thought that the 3D world is the real thing, kicking back. That's the challenge. It's not the practice itself. Well, I appeal to you to try it. If you try it, you will discover the great wisdom of the ancients, for they told it to us in their own strange, wonderful, symbolic form. But unfortunately, you and I misinterpreted their stories and took it for history, when they intended it as instruction to simply achieve our every objective. You see, imagination puts us inwardly in touch with the world of states. These states are existent. They are present now, but they are mere possibilities while we think of them. But they become overpoweringly real when we think from them and dwell in them. You know, there is a wide difference between thinking of what you want in this world and thinking from what you want. Let me tell you, when I first heard of this strange and wonderful power of the imagination, it was in 1933 in New York City. An old friend of mine taught it to me. He turned to the 14th of John, and this is what he read, quote, "In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you, and if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there ye may be also." He explained to me that this central character of the Gospels was human imagination, that the mansion was not a place in some heavenly house, but simply my heart's desire. If I would make a living representation of the state desired and then enter into that state and abide in that state, I would realize it. At the time, I wanted to make a trip to the island of Barbados in the West Indies, and I had no money. He explained to me that if I would, by night, as I slept in New York City, assumed I was sleeping in my earthly father's house in Barbados and go sound asleep in that state, that I would realize my trip. Well, I took him at his word and tried it. For 1 month, night after night, as I fell asleep, I assumed I was sleeping in my father's home in Barbados. At the end of my month, an invitation from my family came inviting me to spend the winter in Barbados. I sailed for Barbados the early part of December of that year. From then on, I knew I had found this savior in myself. The old man told me that it would never fail. Even after it happened, I could hardly believe that it would not have happened anyway. That's how strange this whole thing is. On reflection, it happens so naturally. You begin to feel or to tell yourself, well, it would have happened anyway. And you quickly recover from this wonderful experience of yours. It never failed me if I would give the mood, the imagined mood, sensory vividness. I could tell you unnumbered case histories to show you how it works, But in essence, it is simple. You simply know what you want. When you know what you want, you are thinking of it. That is not enough. You must now think from it. Well, how could I think from it? I am sitting here and I desire to be elsewhere. How could I, while sitting here physically, put myself in imagination at a point in space removed from this little room and make that real to me? Quite easily. My imagination puts me in touch inwardly with that state. I imagine that I am actually where I desire to be. How can I tell that I am there? This is one way to prove that I am there, for what a man sees when he describes his world is, as he describes it, relative to himself. So what the world looks like depends entirely upon where I stand when I make my observation. So if I describe my world, it is related to that point in space I imagine that I am occupying. Then I must be there. I am not there physically, no, but I am there in my imagination, and my imagination is my real self. And where I go in imagination and make it real, there I shall go in the flesh also. When in that state I fall asleep, it is done. It is done. I have never seen it fail. So this is the simple technique upon how to use your imagination to realize your every objective. Here is a very healthy and productive exercise for the imagination, something that you should do daily. Daily, relive the day as you wish you had lived it, revising the scenes to make them conform to your ideals. For instance, suppose today's mail brought you disappointing news. Revise the letter. Mentally rewrite it and make it conform to the news you wish you had received. Or suppose you didn't get the letter you wish you had received. Write yourself the letter and imagine that you received such a letter. Let me tell you a story that took place in New York not very long ago. In my audience sat this lady who had heard me numerous times, and I was telling the story of revision. That man, not knowing the power of imagination, he goes to sleep at the end of the day, tired and exhausted, accepting as final all the events of the day. And I was trying to show that man should, at that moment before he sleeps, he should rewrite the entire day and make it conform to the day he wished he had experienced. Here is the way a lady wisely used this law of revision. It appears that 2 years ago, she was ordered out of her daughter-in-law's home. For 2 years, there was no correspondence. She had sent her grandson at least 24 presents in that interval, but not one was ever acknowledged. Having heard the story of revision, this is what she did. As she retired at night, she mentally constructed 2 letters. One she imagined coming from her grandson and the other from her daughter-in-law. In these letters, they expressed deep affection for her and wondered why she had not called to see them. This she did for 7 consecutive nights, holding in her imaginary hand the letters she imagined she had received and reading these letters over and over until it aroused within her the satisfaction of having heard. Then she slept. On the 8th day, she received a letter from her daughter-in-law. On the inside, there were 2 letters, one from her grandson and one from the daughter-in-law. They practically duplicated the imaginary letters that this grandmother had written to herself 8 days before. This art of revision can be used in any department in your life. Take the matter of health. Suppose you were ill. Bring before your mind's eye the image of a friend. Put upon that face an expression that implies that he or she sees in you that which you want the whole world to see. Just imagine he is saying to you that he has never seen you look better, and you reply, "I have never felt better." Suppose your foot was injured. Then do this. Construct mentally a drama which implies that you are walking, that you are doing all the things that you would do if the foot was normal, and do it over and over until it takes on the tones of reality. Whenever you do in your imagination that which you would do in the outer world, you will do it in the outer world. The one requisite is to arouse your attention in a way and into an intensity that you become wholly absorbed in the revised action. You will experience an expansion and refinement of the senses by this imaginative exercise and eventually achieve vision in the inner world. The abundant life promised is ours to enjoy now, but not until we have the sense of the Creator as our imagination can we experience it. persistent imagination centered in the feeling of the wish fulfilled is the secret of all successful operations. This alone is the means of fulfilling the intention. Every stage of man's progress is made by the conscious, voluntary exercise of the imagination. Then you will understand why all the poets have stressed the importance of controlled, vivid imagination. In the words of William Blake, "In your own bosom you bear your heaven and earth, and all you behold, though it appears without, it is within, in your imagination, of which this world of mortality is but a shadow." Try it, and you too will prove that your imagination is the creator. I find this so incredibly inspiring, and in the fashion of the spiral, I know we have revisited and visited and revisited these themes over and over again, but we are ever in the dance of the spiral moving forward as well. We are deepening into this material. We're not just spinning our wheels. So I hope that today is very exciting to you, that the material we're covering here is very exciting. And I'll talk to you in the first couple days of February as we honor the growing light. If you're in the Northern Hemisphere, that is the time of Imbolc or Groundhog Day. And I just welcome you as we embrace a 2024 like no other that we've ever had in terms of the possibility and the richness of experience that is ours to enjoy. So until next time, take good care. Thank you. Hi, everyone. If you're enjoying this podcast, remember to hit subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And if my work is nourishing your heart and imagination, consider supporting the Apothecary podcast. Just follow the links to make a contribution. And for the full scope of my projects and offerings, including my weekly newsletter, visit lorigreen.net.